People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio, and this is Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. Now, my guest this week is Aline Marie Holder, a writer, musicologist and opera singer who loves to interweave her love of literature with her love of music. She was born in Bloemfontein, grew up in Barrydale and then in Strand. She got her BMus honours at the University of Stellenbosch and her master's degree in music from Canterbury Christ Church University. And actually, she's currently conducting opera research for the Norwegian University of Science and Technology in Trondheim in Norway as a PhD candidate. The other interesting thing about, of many interesting things about Aline, is she writes fantasy because anything else is too tame for a wild imagination, it says here, and makes up foreign species and builds cities in non-existent countries. And she also likes to write from the perspective of a musician. So there's lots to find out about you, Aline. Welcome to People of Note.
Thank you.
I want to find out, first of all, where your love of music comes from. Was it something that's been with you all along? Because you really are immersed in it, aren't you? Mm.
It just blossomed one day and kept growing. I think I must have been between the ages of 12 and 13 when I really became passionate about music, and I also started some piano lessons that I didn't continue with for very long, but something was sparked there that kept growing. And from then on, I started buying secondhand CDs at the cash and carry or wherever I could find them. And I also discovered Fine Music Radio.
Oh, did you? That's a nice thing to say.
Yeah, so I remember I was listening to Die Moldau that you were broadcasting. And I don't remember which program it was or who the presenter was, but there was a discussion of what this music represents and the warm stream and the cool stream that meet each other, and then this hunting scene and this peasant wedding scene
That's depicted.
And that amazed me so much that I became interested in music slightly from an intellectual level as well, and not just because it's beautiful.
So
it was a combination of several factors.
And then, so you did learn the piano, but then when did the singing come in as an opera singer? Was that much later or at the same time?
It was earlier a little bit, but also later. Mm-hmm. So as a child, I took some lessons just to compete in the I Stetford, and then I stopped again. Same with piano. It didn't last for very long, so I cannot play piano. But then in high school, I started taking lessons again, late in high school. And
piano lessons.
Singing lessons.
Singing lessons, okay.
Yes. And then in university, I actually started studying humanities for 1 year. And then I just wanted to take singing lessons from the lecturers at the Conserve at Stellenbosch University and did my audition. And then they said, you should come and study with us, because I had the music theory from high school. So that's how the singing lessons evolved.
Now, as I said when I was introducing you, you do a number of things. You're doing a lot of research, for example, in Norway. Was there a time in your life where you made a conscious decision to go the sort of academic route and do, which we'll discuss later, the fascination with aspects of 17th, 18th century operas, trials, roles, and so on. Mm-hmm. How did that manifest itself? How did that come about?
So my academic interests coincided with my interest as singer quite a lot. I discovered my love for musicology quite early in my bachelor's studies, and this was through writing essays for the module musicology. And even though I had a busy student life and I was with some essays, I was sitting in my residence room at 1 a.m. in the morning slaving away at these essays, but I realized I was having the time of my life.
My goodness, so, that's interesting.
Yeah, I realize I'm in a difficult situation. I'm under time pressure and I'm tired and I'm hungry and I'm groggy.
It's 1 in the morning.
But I was enjoying it. So I realized there's something here that I can't live without. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's to an extent grew even faster from that point onwards. And as a singer, since I'm a mezzo-soprano, at some point I discovered that in eras such as the Baroque, there is a lot more music written for the mezzo-soprano voice that is for male characters than for female characters.
Ah.
Or at least sometimes the music for male characters with high voice is more interesting or more fun. So I started learning some songs and arias from trouser role characters, and then I started realizing, oh, this is very interesting. And the feminist in me also took an interest in this cross-gender on the stage theme. And from then on, I started reading up on it, and eventually that's where my research led.
You've just said the feminist in you. Is that quite a strong streak in you?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So therefore, something like trouser roles would be of particular interest, actually.
Mm.
So I'm looking forward to discussing that with you
later.
And so your first degree, your music degree, your Bachelor of Music Honours, what was your major? Was it singing?
It was.
Okay.
Singing. And I also had to write a bachelor thesis. Or an honors thesis, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And that was on this song cycle by Roelof Temming that I suggested.
Well, we're going to go, shall we go straight there? Because, as you say, tell me a little bit about the song cycle and what we are going to hear.
Mm. So this song cycle is quite a fascinating piece of music. And it's a double layer of parody, if I can put it like that. So the poet Deje Opperman wrote a series of poems, and each of these is imitating a separate poet from the Afrikaans tradition, especially from the 1930s or 1940s. Now, each poem follows a certain theme, and Opperman also introduces these 9 poems with an introductory text. And then he describes it's almost like a theme and variation structure. And the theme is the widow walking by the beach on a Sunday afternoon with her 2 collies. And each poem describes the widow a bit differently. Some describe her in a very sentimental way. Others describe her as completely hysterical and losing her mind. One describes her in a very, disregarding of the norms of society, contemptuous towards the expectations of her as a widow. And she's sunbathing and enjoying her freedom as a without her husband. Well, that's the implication, at least. So that's the text. And then Roelof Temming took this text and he set each of these poems in a different way. And the way he did it was imitating, not always, but often, imitating a composer from the 20th century. There is Debussy, for example. There is Hindemith, Weber. And there's a very interesting dialogue between Temming's setting and Opperman's text.
Okay.
Op 'n Sondagmiddag loop die weduwee Fourier in swart geklee met 2 kolliehonde langs die see. C.M. van den Jever. Thank you. D. Du Plessis. Low.
The song Cycle by Rudolf Temming, based on the poems of Oppermann. And we heard the mezzo-soprano Minette de Toy-Pierce and the pianist Elna van der Merwe. The first choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Aline Marie Holder, who, as I said, is a writer, musicologist and opera singer, and is doing all sorts of academic work as well in Norway. Aline, I want to concentrate now on your... I want to use the word fascination, I'm not sure that is the right word, with trouser rolls, mm-hmm. because that seems to feature a fair amount in certainly what I've read about you.
Yes.
Was it, what intrigued you about trouser rolls as, and I know you're going to, you said you were a feminist,
mm-hmm.
was it an, why should women put trousers on? But mm-hmm. let me not put words in your mouth, tell me what attracted you to learn more about trouser rolls?
Interesting. So, firstly, I got an interest in trouser rolls as a singer because I realized that it felt different to perform them. I felt a bit stronger, you might even say, and a bit bigger, and like I was taking up a bit more space, which you have to if you're going to perform the King of Persia. You
Absolutely,
can't be
yeah.
a timid little girl on the stage. And this actually led me down a journey where I drafted an article, which I never submitted for publication, but it was a good learning experience nonetheless. This led me down this journey of how learning to perform extracts from trouser rolls has actually confronted me and how I carry myself, especially coming from a white Afrikaans culture, because this culture has certain expectations of how women should present themselves. And I psychoanalyzed this phenomenon in myself and in my culture Many young Afrikaans, white Afrikaans women will probably know what I'm talking about.
You mean subservient
yes,
to the man?
That's right.
In that culture.
That is absolutely right. And also in your body language, how you should sit and how you should stand and how you should walk and what you should wear. There's a lot of prescriptions of how you are allowed to present yourself in the world. So I studied this phenomenon and realized that doing trouser rolls requires me to go in the opposite direction. So I had to learn how I would carry myself quite naturally, not naturally, but as Judith Butler would say, how I've learned to carry myself or through the act of performativity. In other words, our society subconsciously rewards certain behaviors and punishes others. And then we repeat those behaviors that get rewarded, and that is performativity.
Okay, but I could simplify it to sort of my stand, the man in the street, and say you performing a trouser roll have to pretty well reject everything you learnt
yes.
in your culture as an Afrikaans white woman.
Exactly.
And be exactly, you had to become a man.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So in learning how to play trouser rolls, I learned how I've actually been conditioned to carry myself. And just that knowledge was quite liberating and empowering. So that was one of the reasons why I caught an interest in the trouser roll tradition. But then also its historical roots. And I thought this long chain of events going from the castrati and the mezzo-sopranos and altos who have to kind of stand in for the castrati now and then on the Italian opera stage. That also fascinated me. And also just the thought that in the early 18th century, when there were also very strict prescriptions for how certain genders are allowed to present,
very much so,
especially women, why it was acceptable for a woman to dress as a man on stage. It's as if anything goes on the stage. The rest of society has very strict rules, but on the stage, anything is allowed.
Mm-hmm.
So that also fascinated me, and especially if there were any leaks between the stage and society, or whether the stage was completely isolated.
How, in that case, with these trouser rolls, how, in your mind, does the countertenor fit in a male singing in a mezzo or alto range?
Well, fits in pretty naturally. Well, in the 18th century, they had the castrati, of course, so you would have a man singing a male role, and now we have countertenors, so it would be a easy casting choice for a director. But if one were to choose between a mezzo-soprano and a countertenor, it would probably be based on their skills alone and not necessarily how they look.
Yeah, and it's a different sound, I always find. It's
yes.
quite a different sound, the countertenor. You can immediately hear that you're not listening to a mezzo.
Yeah, definitely.
A completely different sound. Anyway, we need another piece of music now. And here we've got music by Francesca Caccini from La Liberazione di Ruggiero d'Alisola. So what are we going to listen to after that complicated title?
So this is an extract from scene 2. So the opera is not divided into acts like they are today, but just into various scenes. And this scene, especially for me as a fantasy writer, is quite fascinating because Ruggiero, the young protagonist, encounters a group of people who have been turned into trees. And
it sounds very much up your street.
Yes.
Which we're still coming to that.
Yes. And Elcina is very enamored with Ruggiero, but he realizes that she's been tricking him, so he wants to leave the island. And these trees know, or people who have been turned into trees, know that if he leaves, Alcina is going to be very angry. Alcina is a wicked witch, and she will probably take her anger out on them. So they are pleading with Ruggiero to stay. But then Melissa, who is the good witch, comes to save the day, and she comforts these plants, saying, "Don't worry, you will be liberated." And this extract is how this scene is performed in the opera.
That was an excerpt from scene 2 of Francesca Caccini's opera La Liberazione di Ruggiero d'Alisola. And it was another choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Aline Marie-Holder, whom, as I've said to you before, is a writer, musicologist and opera singer working in Norway at the moment for a PhD. And can I just dip into Norway for a moment? How did you end up in Norway, may I ask?
Short answer, they gave me a job.
Okay.
So while I was still doing my master's in Canterbury, one of my lecturers actually forwarded the advertisement for this research post at the Norwegian University of Science and Technology. And I realized that it fit me like a glove. It was focusing on Venice and the role of women in the opera industry of the early 18th century, which is quite understudied as of yet. And I had the opportunity to be a part of that project through the perspective of a singer, and I had this focus on the women who sang predominantly trouser roles with Vivaldi. And I thought, that is the perfect project for me, and I applied, and now I'm in Norway.
Can you speak the language?
Almost.
Almost.
Yes.
Because apparently it's quite a difficult language to learn.
Well, I have Afrikaans as a first language, so, and Norwegian is also a Germanic language, so the Afrikaans helps a lot. So for me, it wasn't that difficult.
Oh, okay. And how long have you been there, and how much still to go?
I've been there since early November 2022, mm-hmm. and I will be leaving early November, or my PhD is until early November 2025.
Okay. I won't ask you where you're going to go after that, because probably you don't know just at the moment.
We'll see.
What has surprised me, talking to you about trouser roles, and this is me being, I suppose, biased, is when you said you were a feminist, I thought you were going to object to the concept of trouser roles. Mm-hmm. Why should women have to go on stage as a man and, as you said, learn the characteristics and body language of a man when they could use women and let them be women?
Yes, that is a very interesting take, and something I have also delved into quite a bit. Interestingly, for some of the singers in the early 18th century, playing male roles was a bit subpar. They would play male roles to pay the rent and then hope to play the prima donna at some point in the future. And your comment on why not just let them be women, that is something that I've also thought about quite a lot. And something I want to experiment with in the future, and have already experimented with on a small scale, is taking operas with a romantic pairing with a prima donna soprano and a trouser role male character, or a male character scored for a high treble voice, and just make that a woman as well. So the voice is already very fitting for a female singer, so might as well be a female character too. So yeah, that's another angle of a feminist take on the trouser role.
Because then you would run into problems, wouldn't you, if say there's a love interest between the soprano and the mezzo, and the mezzo is a woman, as a woman, it twists the plot somewhat.
Yeah, it will be a homosexual romance and not a heterosexual one.
I was going to say that, but I was shy. That's we spoke about countertenors earlier. Am I right in saying, or am I completely wrong, that countertenors do they sing the role of a female character, or is that a stupid question? I'm trying to think of the countertenor roles I know, but very often they sing male roles.
Yes. Well, I've not.
With a high voice.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever come across that. It's probably possible. Yeah. And opera.
You mean you've never come across a countertenor singing a woman's role?
No.
Okay.
I haven't, at least.
Oh, good. Well, you're the expert, so I'm glad you said that almost. So, as you say, it's interesting that you've almost downplayed the feminist part in your approach to this. Am I right in saying that?
Oh, I'm not sure.
To the trouser role concept. Because, as I said, I was expecting you to say something negative about, you know, this shouldn't happen to women, and why should women be treated like that?
I see.
That sort of angle. But you haven't done that at all, which I found interesting.
Okay. Now I understand what you mean. Well, I'd rather say the feminist approach wasn't downplayed, but more, and that is how I usually approach music and musicology from a feminist perspective, is to look for opportunities in something. So there is this trouser roll tradition, which is a very fascinating, very rich tradition. And instead of being a naysayer and saying this is bad, this is wrong, and piling a lot of criticism on something that is very long-standing, I would rather study it, take it apart, and look for ways that it can be used to say something interesting and useful about
and positive, yeah.
And positive about today, and how we might use it to improve our gender relations and think about how we can challenge our perceptions of men and women in the present.
Yeah, no, that does make sense of what you said there. And the trouser roll concept sort of ended in the classic. Well, Mozart has famously a trouser roll in Figaro, but I think after that there's not much, is there? Or are there later ones? Are there 20th century trouser rolls?
Yes, there are.
Really?
Richard Strauss.
Of course, Rosenkavalier.
Rosenkavalier and Der Komponist.
Yes.
Interesting about Der Komponist is the librettist, I might misquote my sources here, but the librettist did not want the composer to be sung by a woman, because that is a high-status male character that should be sung by a man. Mm-hmm. But the composer, well, Richard Strauss, was adamant that it should be sung by a woman.
Oh, that is interesting.
So
I didn't know that.
It is a bit subversive in, yes. in this case.
Subversive, right. And yeah. he, as we know, loved the female voice, especially the soprano voice,
oh, yes.
Richard Strauss. Let's have another piece of music. And in fact, we're going to Vivaldi now, aren't we? And what are we going to hear? And is it in fact a trouser roll?
Yes.
Okay.
So this is Nel Profondo from Vivaldi's Orlando. And interestingly, this really powerful warrior of Orlando was this role was assigned to a woman. Possibly Vivaldi first envisioned a heroic tenor for the role, but there is quite a bit of indication that the music was in the end scored for the voice of Lucia Lancetti, who was a contralto. And it's quite interesting that this really iconic aria that later made its way into several other Vivaldi operas was given a voice to for the first time by a woman. And I think because these female singers who did very similar work to Lucia Lancetti, because they were so instrumental in Vivaldi's writing of the music, because we know that he really knew the voices of his singers very well. Because of that, we really should know a bit more about these singers. And that is why I'm doing my PhD research on them. And this is a little snippet of what that is all about.
Thank you.
Music by Vivaldi from his opera Orlando, Nel Profundo, and another choice of my guest, Aline Marie Holder. And we're talking about, Marie incidentally is an opera singer, she's a mezzo, and we're talking about trouser roles. But I want to talk now, because we've talked quite a lot about trouser roles, mm-hmm. about the other part of you as a writer, a fantasy writer, and an Afrikaans novelist and poet. So this must make you fairly busy. Am I right in saying you write children's books as well, because of your what we spoke about earlier, imagination and mm-hmm. creating things that aren't necessarily real? Tell me a bit about where that came from in the midst of your studies of music.
Yes. So I wouldn't say it's children's books, but rather youth fiction.
Okay.
So for teenagers and young adults between the ages of 15 and their early 20s, yes, I recently published my debut novel, which is called Samboksalf in a Draaktroon. And it is a story about dragons who end up in the Karoo and a troubled young teenage girl who gets involved with a really strange and fascinating plot. So that is my first published work. I should talk about how I got into this, into the writing.
Okay.
So I started writing in high school, but I didn't take it very seriously then yet. And I've been working on a first novel since late in high school, but that didn't really go anywhere. And then the coronavirus pandemic happened, and I was trapped in my university residence for several weeks. And I thought the best way to spend this time would be to write a novel. And that is where Samboksalf in a Draaktroon was born.
During this time of isolation.
That's
and
right.
Is it something, it's interesting, isn't it? Because do you compose music at all?
I have tried, but I decided not to go down that avenue.
Okay. So writing literature obviously is feeding another part of your creativity that needs to be fed.
Mm-hmm, yes.
But there's poetry as well, isn't there?
There is poetry, definitely. And what you ask about composition, which might be this combination of the two, right? Mm-hmm. Text and music.
Yes, there you go.
But I usually do it the other way around. So music often inspires my writing instead of me taking my writing and putting it to music. Many of my poems have been inspired by music that I've listened to or played or experiences that I've had at concerts, for example. And I'm actually also working on another manuscript for a novel, which is not a youth novel. It's a adult fiction. And this novel follows the story of a character who is, like myself, a musicologist, and, like myself, has a strong interest in the work of women composers. And in this story, which has strong elements of magical realism, there is almost a blurring of the borders between the stage and reality. So all these mythological figures that you get on the opera stage from, for example, Orpheus and Eurydice and these creatures from the underworld, they become actual characters in the book. And so my research as musicologist has given me this wealth of imagery and plots and characters that have made this manuscript of mine quite rich, if I may say so myself.
Of course you must. It says here, and I mentioned this earlier, you like to write from the perspective of a musician. So
yes.
This is what you're saying. It's the music that inspires your writing.
Yes.
And not the other way around. And the non-existent cities, non-existent countries, is that all part of the sort of fantasy world that you create?
Yes. That citation refers to some short stories that I've written and another science fiction that I'm working on as well.
Do you write always in Afrikaans?
Yes. I have considered English, but for now it's Afrikaans because I enjoy it.
Okay. And then this book that you've just told me about, that's in draft form at the moment, could that ever become an opera?
Oh, that is
There's
interesting.
There's a thought, hey?
That would be a very nice opera. I think it might be an expensive opera because it jumps through various centuries.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a historical fiction as well. Yeah, an opera company with a budget, perhaps.
Then who's going to write the music?
Yeah.
There's a thought. Okay, well, let's have some more music. And in fact, you're keen for us to hear another of the songs or a couple of songs from the song cycle with which we began, Roald Temming to poems by Odendaal.
Opperman.
To poems by Opperman. So there are 9 songs. We've heard the first 3. Now let's hear 4, 5, and 6. And is there anything special here we should listen out for?
Listen out for number 6, which takes a almost fugal form. See if you can hear that.
MP van Wyk Lou, number 1. O God, nachts is schrecklich warte, stab die Wede weh, verjäh mit die Wehet, die Wahnsinn, vor later Tweeh, ohne Vertrauen, war sei Tränen, MP van Wyk Lou, nummer 2. Uiskriege.
There are another three songs, number 4, 5, and 6, from the song cycle by Rudolf Temming, set to poems by Obermann. And we heard Manette de Toy-Pierce and Elna van der Merwe there. And we're going to hear actually the other three to end the program, because my guest, Aline Marie-Holder, is determined we should hear the whole cycle, aren't you?
Yes.
So just before I let you go, I want to find out about your stage work, because you have performed in Baroque operas and things like that, haven't you?
As a soloist, not in large-scale operas, but what I have done is smaller projects, but always with quite an interesting idea behind them. So at some part during the later stages of my studies, I decided I'd rather do my own thing and gather a few musicians and stage a small production that has an interesting idea behind it, rather than enter the performance industry, which I did not think was the right lifestyle for me. So what I have done in the past is take Gluck's Orpheus and Eurydice and rework it, much like the way we discussed earlier, taking the male role of Orpheus, well suited for a woman's voice, and we turned Orpheus into Orfea. And this was then a homosexual romance, whereas Orpheus and Eurydice was, of course, a heterosexual one.
Mm-hmm.
And we just played the story out like that. And
did it work, do you think?
Oh, yes.
It
worked very nicely.
Okay.
And of course, we did not have the chorus and all the trappings that a big opera should have. So what I did was I took poems from Idier Duplessis' cycle Fremde Liefde, which also has this theme of homosexual romance and the prejudice that the subject of the poem faced at that time. If you know the poem Fremde Liefde, you will understand what I'm talking about. And I took those poems and inserted them to supplement the chorus in a way,
mm-hmm.
and told exactly the same story as Orpheus and Eurydice, with supplementing these poems and some of the extracts from Ovid's telling of the Orpheus myth as well. And there I sang Orpheus, and then I had a Eurydice and a Amore as well.
Oh, okay. Is this something that you're likely to do more of in the future once your PhD is over? Is that sort of the way you see yourself going in the immediate future?
Definitely, definitely.
With reworking things like that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, now, Aline Marie-Holder, it's been actually quite fascinating talking to you, the interesting angle on opera and the things you've mentioned. So thank you for that. And you are, as I say, based in Norway at the moment, aren't you?
That's right.
2025.
At least.
And good luck with that. And good luck with Norwegian, which you say is going well anyway.
It is.
Now, tell me, we're going to listen to the last three of the cycle of 9 songs by Rudolf Temming. Anything special here?
Yes, look out for, if you can see, the resemblance between number 7 and Claude Debussy.
Oh, there you are. So we're hearing 7, 8, and 9.
Yes.
And you'll hear as the performers, Manette de Toy-Pierce and Elna van der Merwe, piano. And my guest was Aline Marie-Holder.
Thank you, Rodney.
Elizabeth Eybers, Portrait van a Weduwe. Wat sal sy vir hom antwoord? Nee, of ja. Ernst van Heerden. Is hier Pretorius.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.